impressive for 100 years of elapsed time. I queried my location and duties. The scenario consisted of a space station in geosynchronous orbit, with me in charge of the power, traffic control, and environment. As an engineer, this was right up my alley. I also had an escape button in case I needed to abort the scenario. It took me very little time to establish the requirements for my control duties. I determined boundary parameters for each and instructed Guppy to interrupt me if anything fell outside of specs. I expected there would be lots of emergencies. I then dove into the library in earnest. 6. Bob, July 19th, 2133. Damn it! Dr. Landers leaned back with a surprised expression. Problem, Bob? Sorry, Doc. I was reading up on current electrical engineering standards. You yanked me in mid-paragraph. Dr. Landers looked down at his tablet and cleared his throat. Ah, yes, Bob. You've been in that simulation for 2 days, subjective time. During that period, nothing went outside of specs, despite everything we threw at you. That's very impressive. The logs from your Guppy indicate that you've set up some interesting monitoring interfaces and scripts. Our software people are jumping around in excitement. Several of them have asked to keep a copy of you. Is that possible? Technically, of course it is. We back you up every night. Just a matter of doing a restore, assuming we had a matrix of our own big enough to hold you. The doctor blew out a breath and shrugged. Unfortunately, Faith owns you, as they are financing this project, so we don't have a lot of leeway. On that subject, when are you going to tell me what I'm being groomed for? Dr. Landers cocked his head. What one of you is being groomed for, there's still one other candidate. Wait, we lost two more? When? One was due to a psychotic break a few days ago, and the other was determined by Minister Travis to be unsuitable. Oh. What happened to him? Purged. No reason to save it once the ministry said no. Wow. Even Dr. Landers is pretty matter-of-fact about this. They just killed someone. I couldn't afford to let my feelings show, though. At least some of the evaluations were going to be subjective, and I didn't want to alienate anyone. So the final goal of this whole exercise... Soon, Bob. Right now, I'd like to talk to you about your previous life. You handled 2 days subjective in a simulation with no human contact at all and were irritated when I pulled you out. Silly question, perhaps, but would you consider yourself a loner? I chuckled. Let me tell you a little story. There was a movie out a number of years ago called Castaway, 133 years ago. Christ sake, Guppy, shut it! Heard of it? Dr. Landers shook his head. It is part of my job to study and understand your era, but I can't watch every single movie ever produced. And so many stinkers, too. Really, if you're up on Star Wars and Star Trek, you're golden. Anyway, back to Castaway. Cliff Notes version. A guy gets shipwrecked on a desert island for 4 years. I watched the video with a girlfriend. Afterward, she described it as a nightmare. I was surprised because I'd been thinking of it as a fantasy. 4 years of no interruptions. Of course, it would have been more enjoyable with something to read. I waved my Waldo in what I hoped was a human gesture. Point is, that's when I really realized that I don't think like most people. I'm fine with solitude. In fact, I get antsy when I'm around people for too long a period without respite. The doctor took a deep breath, put his tablet down, and leaned back in his chair. He looked pensive for a few moments, then leaned forward on his elbows.
Okay, Bob. That's about what I thought. But it's nice to have confirmation. So, here's the bottom line. Do you know what a von Neumann probe is?
Yes, of course. It's an automated interstellar probe that builds copies of itself as it visits systems. There was a moment of silence as my brain caught up with the conversation. Oh. Wait. Are you saying?
That is correct. We are preparing one of you to be the controlling intelligence for a von Neumann probe.
I watched through several video feeds as the small roamers reassembled a 3D printer that I'd been required to diagnose and repair. Roamers, it turned out, came in various sizes, from a huge monster spider 8 feet across through the medium-sized units that I had access to, right down to something the size of a gnat.
Below that size, nanites were available, but they were single-purpose devices with very limited flexibility. At the moment, I was working on coordinated activities using several different sizes of roamers. The 3D printer was only one of many challenges I'd been given. The roamers required minimal supervision once the tasks and dependencies had been laid out. The trick was to figure out the proper level of detail in the instructions, to avoid errors from giving too much leeway without micromanaging them to a standstill. Without my kibitzing, they could do any job up to 10 times as fast, so I tried to lay out the plan and then stay out of the way. Once I figured out how to define conditions under which the roamers would interrupt me, even active supervision became optional. While they worked, my mind wandered. Once Dr. Landers had spilled the beans, he had made some of the project documents available to me. I hadn't been this impatient since the day I signed the papers for the sale to TerraSoft. Every second had dragged on that day, and every millisecond dragged now. I wanted today's training to be over so I could concentrate on studying and reading. The doctor's little robot was going to be enthusiastically cooperative from now on. Oh my God, this is like every nerd's dream job. I could be going to the stars. 7. Bob, July 25th, 2133.
Things are going to hell.
Dr. Landers looked uncharacteristically angry.
The faith factions that won our project shut down went ballistic when we announced that we had some viable candidates for Project Heaven. They've teamed up.
Wait. Project Heaven? Project Heaven? I'm afraid to ask.
Habitable Earth's Abiogenic Vessel Exploration Network.
Please remember that I don't think these things up.
That's really not bad, in a horrid kind of way. I guess it will, in fact, be an abiogenic vessel.
But network? How many will be going out?
Dr. Landers stared into space, looking slightly embarrassed. Originally, it was 8, then 4, then 1, as project funding was rebudgeted or simply redirected elsewhere. As I was saying, there are several factions that don't want this to happen for various reasons. Some don't like replicants. Some don't like the idea of spreading off Earth. Some consider the idea of a vessel that can build more of itself to be blasphemous, and so on.
The doctor sighed and sat silently for a moment, a frown on his face.
We are also in competition with other countries, such as the United States of Eurasia, to locate and claim new Earths. Many in faith see this as an unnecessary drain on our resources. All these groups have one common goal, though: scuttling the project.
Dr. Landers shook himself and consulted his tablet.
I've given you complete project and library access, as discussed. Getting you ready is a critical path task, so anything you can do to help move this along will be, helpful.
He got up and began to pace.
There's one other thing, Bob. There are many possible reasons for special interest groups to get the project pared down to one vessel, but we believe the main reason we really have to worry about is that one vessel provides a convenient single point of failure.
Sabotage?
Something like that. We have nothing concrete. I just thought you should know.
Without further discussion, the doctor picked up his tablet and left.
I'd been thinking about the previous discussion, and I had some questions for the doctor. My opportunity came at the end of a lesson on controlling 3D printers.
Doctor, I want to talk about politics.
Dr. Landers laughed.
Okay, Bob, what's on the agenda?
You mentioned the United States of Eurasia earlier. I've been reading about the current geopolitical situation, and it's a lot different from my day. The name of the USE is a little grandiose. They don't really cover anywhere near all of Eurasia.
Yes, but the old USA didn't cover all of America either. Not even all of North America.
I waved my Waldo in a dismissive gesture. Okay, fine. From what the library says, it looks like there's been a lot of consolidation. Faith controls all of North America except for Washington State, British Columbia, and Alaska. The USE covers all of Europe and most of Western Russia. China absorbed most of Eastern Russia and a lot of the former Asian satellite countries. And the Middle East? I left the sentence hanging.
Not surprisingly, the development of cheap nuclear fusion had a huge impact on the Middle East.
The doctor poked idly at his tablet as he talked. The rich families, such as the Saudi royalty, had long since diversified their investments, so they didn't become paupers. But the tradition of oil exports paying for government programs ended rather abruptly. It essentially triggered what some alarmists insisted on calling World War III. It was really little more than a series of brush wars for most of the planet. In the Middle East, though, it was a bloodbath, and Geneva Convention limitations were mostly ignored. Chemical weapons, dusting with radioactive isotopes, pocket nukes. Most of the Middle East is still uninhabitable, and what's left is certainly not a significant world player. "What surprises me," I replied, "is how much consolidation happened. Faith, the USE, China, the Australian Federation, the Republic of Africa, a laughable irony of a name if I've ever seen one, and the Brazilian Empire. They all account for maybe 80% of the planet. The remaining small countries are either not worth fighting over, like the Middle East, or they're buffer states that no one is willing to make a move on, like Cascadia."
"Did you have a specific question, Bob?"
"Now that you mention it, yes." I wanted to smile. I was constantly irritated with my minimal external presence. "How many of these nations are also running probe projects?"
"Ah."
The question seemed to hit home. Dr. Landers looked very uncomfortable and took a moment before he answered.
"We know of projects by the USE, China, the Brazilian Empire, and ourselves. We suspect that Australia also has one, but if so, they've hidden it well."
"So, pretty much everyone." The doctor shrugged.
"As soon as the breakthrough in subspace theory that allowed the surge drive and SUDAR was formulated, the concepts of not only von Neumann probes, but also interstellar colonization became possible. The USE started their interstellar probe project 2 years ago to much fanfare and national chest-thumping, and everyone else had to follow suit. Can't let the other guy colonize the universe unchallenged, no?"
"2 years? So this is really new stuff?"
"Indeed. Other than prototypes, there are as yet very few surge-equipped vessels in active service."
I was silent for a few moments, thinking about that. So this project was very much a proof of concept. They didn't even know for sure if the probe would work over interstellar distances. Outstanding. But why the big push? This is like the moon race on steroids.
Officially, it's about spreading humanity to other worlds, of course, and the national prestige that goes along with it, but tensions are high between nations and have been for some decades. This whole subject is seen as a zero-sum game, and to a large extent, it is. Each world that we claim is a base of operations denied to everyone else. It's also a base of operations outside the range of surveillance or attack. Unofficially, there's a large military component to the push.
Isn't there always? Some things never change. Why bother, though? There are billions of stars out there.
But only a very few within 10 light years that will have habitable planets. Those will be the most strategically valuable, regardless of other factors.
It occurs to me then, Doctor, that internal faith factions aren't the only thing I have to worry about.
I am afraid that is the case, Bob.
Dr. Landers shrugged.
And it's also part of the reason why trimming the Heaven project down to one ship wasn't met with more resistance by our company. While it benefits the anti-expansionist groups by leaving them just one target, it also benefits us by allowing us to focus our efforts and accelerate our timetable.
Tell me about the other projects.
You mean what we know about the other projects?
Dr. Landers replied with a smirk.
They are unsurprisingly as reticent with details as we are.
The doctor fiddled with his tablet. By this time, I knew that was simply a delaying tactic to give him time to gather his thoughts.
Our intelligence says that China is pushing their project at a breakneck pace, having sacrificed everything for speed, and they will be using an AMI, which is problematic at best. We believe that they are the most likely to fail outright.
The doctor was silent for a few seconds, flicking at his tablet with a finger.
The Brazilian Empire concerns us the most, and not just because of their belligerent and adversarial stance in world politics. We believe they may be arming their probes with the intention of eliminating the competition. They are also the most likely to attempt sabotage. But they are also unlikely to be able to pull off the long-term plan, in our opinion. They are not primarily depending on probes being able to build copies, although the probes will have the capability. Instead, the Empire will simply launch multiple probes as fast as they can build them in system,
We think that if they find a suitable system, they will set up a military presence and reproduce.
Dr. Landers sighed.
The USE is the most likely long-term competitor, although they at least are likely to limit themselves to non-violent tactics. They have the will, the budget, the technological sophistication, and the experience with replicants. They are also considerably ahead of us at the moment on the subject of actual colonization. If someone were to discover a useful planet tomorrow, the USE colonists would be there first by a considerable margin.
Wow. Do we have anything?
We have you and the other replicant, Bob. Don't discount that. The two of you have shown remarkable resilience. Your quickness at adapting to the reality of your position, combined with your intelligence and education, are not small things. The common wisdom with replicants has been to find a phlegmatic, unimaginative individual who would be satisfied with the routine. You and the other candidates forced us to change our tactics. We think that going in this unexpected direction will make a big difference in the long run.
Well, all right then, time to talk about a raise. Dr. Landers rolled his eyes.
We have to get you a face so I can tell when you're kidding.
8. Bob, August 4th, 2133. For today's entertainment, the doctor had directed me to diagnose and repair a complex piece of electronics, similar to items that I would have to deal with aboard ship. Dr. Landers watched me, as usual, from the window. He liked to engage me in conversation during these exercises. I suspected that he was testing my concentration and ability to multitask. I didn't mind, since the conversations were always interesting and informative. Then a massive jolt shook the building and knocked Dr. Landers off his feet. It was followed immediately by a solid pressure wave of sound, more felt than heard. As Dr. Landers got to his feet, the sounds of gunfire echoed down the hall. He turned to me, yelled, "Stay there!" and ran off.
Stay there? Despite the gravity of the situation, my sense of the ridiculous kicked in. The good doctor was obviously rattled. As he had pointed out to me, I wasn't actually in this room, just attached to... Hello? In the middle of my internal comedy routine, I realized that the window had been popped partly out of its frame. It didn't look as though it would take much persuasion to finish the job, and surely they couldn't blame me for wanting to take a more active role in defense of the project. I directed every roamer in the room to grab the window and pull. The roamers weren't particularly strong, but 32 of the little buggers commanded a lot of leverage. Within moments, the window clattered down and took a divot out of the floor. The window didn't break. That's some very strong stuff. They are scared of me. I chose one of the roamers at random and took over control. Now I could see through its video camera. I directed the other roamers to follow, and we took off down the hall in the direction of the gunfire. Roamers ran along the floors, walls, and ceiling. I was impressed. These people might suck at acronyms, but their tech was pretty good. The building complex was an interesting design. It consisted of a string of large open atriums or lobbies, each surrounded by two floors of offices or labs. Skylights in the atriums provided plenty of illumination, and short hallways connected each central open area. My roamer room was one atrium over from the location of the attack. Maybe the invaders had miscalculated. It took only seconds to get to the action. A group of attackers dressed in black were slowly moving through the offices, shooting as they went. Security guards returned fire, but significantly outgunned, they were being forced back. This operation was being run either by a faith faction that didn't approve of me or by one of the competing nations. Either way, they wanted me dead. It seemed to me that the golden rule applied. Time to reciprocate. Appraising the situation had taken only milliseconds. I was really starting to love being a computer, so the roamers hadn't broken stride. The horde stampeded into the area and swarmed the attackers, concentrating on faces and groins. The roamers were surprisingly tough. No matter how many times an attacker ripped a roamer off his face and tossed it against a wall, the roamer would simply right itself and come back for more. The roamers were equipped with pliers, cutters, and screwdrivers, not technically weapons, but still hard to ignore. and I had more than a month's worth of frustration and angst driving me. Endocrine controls or no, I was thoroughly enjoying the opportunity to serve up some beatings. The attackers finally started to develop a strategy. They managed to get one of their number roamer free. As attackers tossed roamers against the wall, this guy blasted them with a burst of automatic fire. I did a quick millisecond calculation and determined that I'd run out of roamers before they ran out of ammo, and they now had two roamer-free shooters. But the distraction allowed the security guards to regroup. They set up a crossfire and shot a few of the invaders, then invited the rest to surrender. Now the attackers had to deal with gunfire as well as roamers attached to their faces. It was the last straw. The weapons were set down, and the hands went up. Once the security guards had restrained all the remaining invaders, we found ourselves in an awkward tableau. The lead security guard looked at the prisoners, looked at the roamers, opened his mouth to say something, then closed it. I waved a leg on my roamer to get his attention.
This is bad. Where's Landers?
He glanced at his associates, eyes wide. Dr. Landers picked that moment to come running into the atrium. He still had his tablet with him, and he looked as alarmed as the security guards. Since the raid was now effectively over, there had to be something more going on. I realized that they were more concerned about me than about the invaders.
Bob, I wonder if I could persuade you to gather your flock and return to the training room?
He had the power to deactivate me, so it wasn't ever really a question of whether I'd cooperate. In any case, I wasn't the rampaging Frankenstein they seemed to be concerned about. With a roamerish salute, me and my horde headed down the hall. Okay, Doc. Time to spill the beans. What's with this security glass and the quaking in your boots when I got loose? Dr. Landers was courteous enough to not try to pretend he didn't understand what I was talking about. He sighed and leaned back in his chair.
By which I mean the people working on the project, including myself, are not scared of you, Bob. We're scared of the tactical nuke buried in the basement.
If I'd still had eyebrows, they would have shot right off my head.
It is just possible, Bob, that you face a greater danger from our own government than you do from our foreign competitors, at least from certain factions.
He shifted a little to face me and waved a hand. I mentioned before that the upper echelons of faith are not unanimous in supporting this venture. I've very probably understated the situation. I considered that statement for a millisecond or so.
Nuke in the basement.
Yikes.
So this is like the Andromeda strain? Dr. Landers looked confused, so I waved a Waldo in dismissal.
Never mind, another old movie. The point is that the nuke is a last line of defense against me getting out and scaring all the civilians and farm animals.
That's right, Bob.
And I'm definitely going to have to start watching some more old movies.
So who has the button?
I don't know. We've deliberately not been told how we're being monitored, who makes the decision, or how it's carried out. We just know that if someone, somewhere, decides they don't like something, we could all become a radioactive cloud. No warning. No discussion.
And you agreed to this? How much are they paying you?
Dr. Landers laughed.
The rewards for successful completion of this project are considerable. Those who support the venture are throwing a lot of money at it. I personally will be able to retire with my bonus.
He grimaced and gave me a one-sided shrug.
And of course, under faith, agreement is not optional.
I smiled. In my mind, anyway.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll try to stay put in the future.
He swept his hands to take in the room.
And since we're still here talking, I'd guess the immediate danger is over. Someone was either away from their monitoring station or decided you weren't that big of a danger. Or something.
Dr. Landers stood up and looked around the training room. The roamers, the remaining roamers anyway, were properly arrayed on their racks. Maintenance people had levered the security window back into its frame and were bolting it back in place.
I guess we're back to operational. There were three fatalities and several injured. Really, it could have been a lot worse.
I bobbed my cameras by way of response. In a video window, I watched the scene from across the hall. The roamer moved carefully through the air ducts. The little robots were capable of a very light touch, but 100 years of progress hadn't come up with a replacement for galvanized tin as air duct material. I didn't want to announce the roamer's presence to the whole complex. The guerrilla raiding party had shot up my roamers so thoroughly that any kind of inventory was impossible. As near as I could tell, no one realized that one unaccounted-for roamer was wandering the building. So far, I had identified numerous offices, the cafeteria, workshops, and storage. 3D mapping software had built up the layout of the office building. Interestingly, I hadn't found any trace of a nuke in the basement or any area that might have been walled off to contain one. Perhaps it was a bluff. Meanwhile, I'd narrowed down the building layout to 2 possible locations for the computer room. As I moved the roamer through the ducts, I carefully checked for surveillance equipment, trip switches, infrared beams, or any other traps. The roamers were a very impressive bag of tricks and capabilities. I wondered if the Faith Techs really understood everything the roamers were capable of when the various functions were combined. Finally, the roamer arrived at one of the 2 areas that were still blanks in my map, and sure enough, it was on a separate air system. Definitely a good sign. It took me 20 minutes to exit the general ductwork and break into the isolated system. I moved carefully through the air conduit until I came to the room exhaust panel. It was a standard computer room, mostly. Cables, blinking lights, air conditioning, rack-mounted computers. I guess rack mounting was still the most efficient way to organize computers, even with 100 years to improve things. But in the center of the room sat something very new to me. 5 cubes, each one just under a half meter on a side, sat in a line on a low platform. 2 of the cubes glowed an eerie blue, with multicolored indicator lights blinking at their bases. The other 3 were dark. I engaged magnification and pulled in a close-up of the panels at the base of the cubes. Kenneth Martins, Jiro Tanaka, Nevis Ryander, Robert Johansson, Joanna Almeida. This was it. This was us. The candidates. The glowing cubes were Kenneth's and mine. The other 3 candidates were dark. I could see their power switches in the off position. Another thing that hadn't really changed much in 100 years, I guess, but really, how many different ways were there to design a rocker switch? I stared at the tableau for what seemed like forever. I could turn Kenneth off right now. But would it do any good? Could I sabotage him? Should I? Would they figure it out? I felt shame as I realized what I was contemplating. I wasn't going to be that guy, not even in theory. I'd let myself be switched off before I'd save myself by climbing on someone else's back. With a heavy heart, I turned around and left. 9. Bob, August 6th, 2133. I was in the roamer room working on an exercise when I realized that Dr. Landers wasn't alone. He always stood at the window watching me and talking, and it took me a few moments to realize that the steady stream of commentary had stopped. I directed one of the roamers to give me a video feed. Dr. Landers was talking to someone that I would have sworn was Minister Travis's brother. Seriously, did they have that look listed in the job requirements? Must look like scary guy from Poltergeist 2. Jeez. Dr. Landers had turned off the intercom system, but that represented about 3 milliseconds worth of inconvenience. Amateur. I directed a roamer to move to the wall immediately below the window. By pressing its body against the wall, it was able to pick up transmitted vibrations. I had to crank the gain way up, but I had all the audio filtering tricks that 2 centuries of electronic media had developed.
"This is the work of the devil. You are placing your immortal soul in jeopardy by participating in this enterprise."
The Ministry of Truth advised me otherwise.
"These are poor imitations of God's creation. They mock humanity with their false display of intelligence and emotion.
The Ministry of Truth is of the opinion that while they are without a soul, they are merely based on God's creation and not an attempt to usurp his authority.
The air grew momentarily brittle with that silence you get when someone is glaring. I stole a glance using one of the roamers on the table.
Yep, glaring. This unholy activity can have no good end, especially considering the purpose,
which is officially sanctioned by the ministry.
Apostates! Heretics!
Another quick glance verified that Dr. Landers was trying very hard not to roll his eyes. I took a moment to wish I had the option. This guy was seriously wackadoodle. The barrage continued for several minutes. The minister alternately berated and threatened Dr. Landers, who remained carefully non-confrontational and showed a lot more patience than I could ever have. If Minister Loudmouth had been on this side of the window, I think I'd have tried to disassemble him. I managed to remain objective and treat the running stream of vitriol as information rather than a condemnation of my very existence. It would seem that I was either a product of witchcraft or a result of hubris not seen since the days of Babel. Dr. Landers took it for a few moments longer, then snapped, sort of.
Minister Jacoby, I understand your opinions and concerns, by which I mean only that I comprehend what you are saying. However, the Ministry of Truth is not only supporting but actively funding this endeavor. It seems to me, since we're talking about blasphemous acts, that by opposing this activity, you are opposing the ministry. And as they point out, in fact as you yourself have pointed out twice, faith is the direct revealed word of God. Doesn't that make your opposition an instance of blasphemy?
There was a moment of indignant silence as Minister Loudmouth, looking like a fish desperately struggling to breathe, tried to de-hoist himself from his own petard.
You have chosen the wrong friends, Doctor. You will learn that soon enough.
And with that he turned and flounced out, stage right. Yes, flounced, honestly. Dr. Landers leaned on the wall for a few moments with his eyes closed, breathing deeply. Then he turned to the window and played with his tablet for a moment. All done, Bob? I wasn't going to play that game. Who the freaking hell was that, and don't tell me Minister Jacoby? The doctor rubbed his forehead.
Just an example of some of the extreme viewpoints we have to navigate in this great nation, Bob. If he had any real power, he wouldn't have been trying to browbeat me into line. I wouldn't give his threats any extra credence.
Which is not the same as saying you wouldn't give his threats any credence at all.
And I will note for the future, the doctor said with a smile, that turning off the intercom doesn't appear to deter you at all. Shall we continue?
He pointed at the semi-assembled mess on the lab table, and I got back to work. 10. Bob, August 10th, 2133. I snapped back to consciousness. As usual, I did a systems check. Wait. August 10th? Hey, Doc, I seem to be missing a few days. Have you had me on ice for a week?
Dr. Landers looked everywhere except at me. Well, yes and no. Someone managed to sneak a small explosive into the computer room and take out the replicant matrices. We had to ship in a spare unit and restore you from backup. It took a few days.
I was silent for a few moments. That meant that I wasn't the Bob who woke up on June 24th. On the other hand, even back then, I wasn't the same Bob who got killed by a car. Did I have a soul? Did it matter if I was restored from a backup? I realized that in the more than a month that I'd been back as a computer program, I'd somehow managed to avoid coming to any conclusions about my exact status. Rolling with it had become a code phrase for avoiding the issue, but I knew that I had a tendency to avoid dealing with painful issues. Jenny had certainly proven that. And being switched off when not in training contributed as well. I wondered if Dr. Landers had a plan, or if he was just going to wait until I was in space and hope for the best. I had three issues that bothered me. Was I conscious? Could I actually consider myself to be alive?
And was I still Bob? Philosophers had been going on and on about this type of thing for centuries, but now, for me, it was personal. A human, regardless of their opinion on the subject, could depend on being a human. The minister's offhand reference to me as it and replicant had stung at a level I was just now starting to appreciate. I thought back to all the arguments about Turing tests and thinking machines. Was I nothing more than a Chinese room? Could my entire behavior be explained as a set of scripted responses to given inputs? That was probably the easiest uncertainty to answer. The classic Chinese room, which just used scripts to react to input, had no internal dialogue. Even if you made its behavior stochastic to introduce some variation in behavior, it was still only active when responding to input. When not processing a response, it just sat there, idle. By worrying about this right now, I fell into a different category. For that matter, Descartes had his famous cogito ergo sum, but Thomas had added to it with his, since I doubt, I think, since I think, I exist. Well, I was certainly full of doubt. Doubt implied self-awareness and a concern for one's future, so I was a conscious entity, barring evidence to the contrary. One down. Was I alive? Since no one had yet managed to define life rigorously, that was going to be a fun one. As the speaker at that long-ago panel in Vegas had pointed out, fire has most of the qualities of life but is not alive. According to Dr. Landers, I would be able to reproduce via printer-based autofactories. I certainly responded to stimuli and acted with self-interest. The claim that life would have to be carbon-based was chauvinistic and narrow-minded, so yeah, I could consider myself alive. Now, the big one. Who was I? Was I Bob? Or was Bob dead? In engineering terms, what was the metric used to ascribe Bobhood? Bob was more than a hunk of meat. Bob was a person, and a person was a history, a set of desires, thoughts, goals, and opinions. Bob was the accumulation of all that Bob had been for 31 years. The meat was dead, but the things that made Bob different from a chipmunk were alive, in me. I am Bob, or at least, I am the important parts that made Bob. With this last thought, a huge weight lifted off of me. I imagined it would feel the same for someone right after the jury said not guilty. I turned my attention back to the doctor, who was repeating my name in an increasingly panicked tone. I realized that I had been silent for several seconds. "Hey, Doc, I'm here."
"Thank God."
Dr. Landers collapsed into a chair.
"You went silent, and I thought you might have gone psychotic."
They'd put a lot of effort into me by this point, into all of us really, so I understood his reaction. I wanted to smile at him, but of course no joy. "It's okay, Doc. I think that ship just sailed, and I'm still here." Then realization hit me as I processed what he'd said. "Doc, how many spare matrices do you have?"
"Just the one, Bob."
A decision had to be made. I guess congratulations are in order. "So, Kenneth is gone?" Dr. Landers nodded, then did a double take. He looked at me, eyes narrowing.
"Oh, shit!
Damage control, Bob." I quickly threw in the first question I could think of. "So why did they decide to attack now? Has something changed?"
Information about your progress has been circulated. Best guess is that internal faith factions have leaked it in order to goad competing nations into some form of reaction. That's the word from our security people, anyway."
The doctor was still frowning, but seemed uncertain. I had to keep this going.
"Damn, are we close to launch?"
The doctor's expression changed to a frown of concentration. I just needed to keep him distracted long enough for my little faux pas to be forgotten. He consulted his tablet, idly swiping through some pages of information.
"Current project timeline has it about a month away. It can be moved up, though. We've got a fair bit of slack in the schedule right now, thanks to your swift progress."
Again, I tried to smile, and as usual, nothing happened, so I waved a Waldo instead. Still waiting for that raise. Dr. Landers laughed. We're pushing it through HR. Is that the right term? He held the beat, head cocked to the side, then changed the subject. Training session for today. I've got the details here.
I heaved a mental sigh of relief. The immediate danger was over. And if the comment occurred to Dr. Landers later, hopefully he'd be uncertain if he had heard me correctly.
Dr. Landers raised a finger to poke at his tablet, hesitated for a moment, then put his hand down. He was silent for a few moments more, then sighed and looked up at me.
Bob, I'm going to take a chance, I think. I'm going to stop deactivating you during off times, and I'm going to give you access to some more libraries. You'll undergo a half hour of semi-sleep every night while you are backed up, but other than that, you'll be online 24/7. If you do go insane, we'll restore you from a previous backup. That sounds harsh, I know, and I apologize, but I don't think we can afford the luxury of a leisurely project plan anymore. We're going to have to push forward as quickly as possible.
I nodded in response. Well, I bopped my cameras, I guess. It was a kind of good news, bad news thing. I'd finally have some time for some quiet reflection, but it could drive me nuts. Woo-ha!
11. Bob, August 15th, 2133.
So what did happen to old Handeltown? The pretty blonde at the window looked surprised for a moment, then laughed. Dr. Doucette was covering for Landers today. She wasn't nearly as chatty as he was, though. I've been trying to get her talking, so far with minimal success. Dr. Doucette was a looker. I was happy to discover that I hadn't lost my appreciation for beauty with the, change in my lifestyle, although my appreciation wasn't as urgent now, so to speak. She spoke with the standard 22nd century accent, so I was using my translation routine. I'd integrated it to the point where I didn't even notice the different speech patterns. I knew that Dr. Landers was specially trained to deal with replicants and had studied my era, which included getting his patois under control. Dr. Doucette either had skipped that class or wasn't normally supposed to be talking to me. It wasn't an issue as far as I was concerned, and if Dr. Landers was okay with her, then I didn't see a problem. Hopefully the state wouldn't have a cow. Anyway, today I was coordinating a team of roamers to assemble ship components, assembly line style. It was routine work. By now I had written scripts for so many roamer activities that I rarely had to do more than show up. But the good folks at Applied Synergetics had a checklist to run through, so I had to humor them. Dr. Doucette looked down at her tablet. Yeah, everyone came with tablets. Then, satisfied that the status was still quo, answered my question.
Original Handeltown was Handel's birthplace, Salem, Oregon. When he died, the city changed the name and set up a large memorial in his honor. Someone objected and decided to take it out with a pocket nuke.
Nuke? On American soil?
She wagged a finger at me.
Hasn't been American soil for 100 years now. But to answer your question, it was and still is the only nuclear weapon ever deployed in North America.
So they moved Handeltown to Portland. She nodded.
A lot of people died?
She shook her head.
Not like you'd think. We learned a lot about radiation treatments from the Middle East feud. Lots of opportunity to try out different medical procedures. For all the death and horror that the Middle East War generated, it advanced medical knowledge greatly.
Like reviving replicants?
Like reviving replicants.
I was silent for a few moments as I concentrated on guiding the roamers through a particularly tricky bit of assembly. As soon as they were able to continue on their own, I turned back to Dr. Doucette. So what's it like living in a theocracy? Do you have daily prayers?
Dr. Doucette held up one finger in a universal wait-a-minute gesture. She poked at her tablet a few times, then looked up at me.
Sorry. Just checking the location of the security patrols. Some of them might be piety monitors.
I was blank for a moment, then I laughed.
So you're monitoring the monitors?
What are you doing, tracking their security card locations?
Dr. Doucette smiled in return.
The government doesn't really care what we do as long as we give the appearance of piety. But jabber-jiving them will get you a session with the Ministry of Proper Thought that you'll never forget.
Yeah, Dr. Landers mentioned something about that. So, while we've got some privacy, let me ask you this. How do you know I'll do what you want instead of just heading off in some random direction once you release me into the wild? Understand, I love this whole idea, and I can't see myself not cooperating, but you couldn't know that when you revived me. The doctor gazed down at her tablet for a few seconds, a thoughtful look on her face.
There are safeguards, Bob. Your software will ensure mission objectives are met. That's all I'm going to say, but as you pointed out, it's probably not an issue with you.
Safeguards. There's my word of the day, not to like. It was an interesting philosophical issue. How are you supposed to feel if you are forced to do what you would have done anyway? I wondered how it would work. Would I be a marionette on strings, unable to help myself? Or would I think the decisions were mine? I shuddered at the possibility I might find out. 12. Bob, August 17th, 2133. I surfaced from 18 hours 26 minutes of library and project reading. I'd had the forethought to set up an interrupt for anyone speaking to me. I turned my camera to see a very upset Dr. Landers. His voice shaking, he said, "We've just had another attack. Someone tried to blow up some critical components. They missed their target, but four of my staff were killed. We're going to a secondary operations center. How's your reading coming along?" This last sentence was such a non sequitur that I had to run the last few seconds through my mind to make sure I hadn't missed anything. Fine, Doc. Why, specifically? We are going to attempt to move up the launch. That means that you may have to receive some of your final training in flight, as it were. Oh, holy crap. Okay, Doc, what do you need from me?
I've dropped a file into your queue. Read it immediately. Then we will back you up with that knowledge, assimilated, shut you down, and physically move you to the ship.
Physically? Really? You've never heard of FTP?
That would have worked right up until a couple of weeks ago when they blew you up. Where do you think the spare unit came from?
Oh. They had brought the replicant matrix down from the ship? That was the spare?
Replicant hardware is expensive, Bob. You've been working with the actual interfaces that you will use in flight. They've just been attached to simulators up until now. Please read the document. Let me know when you're done, and we'll get started.
He sat down, leaned forward, and clasped his hands together on the desk, looking at me.
Bob, all conversations are potentially being monitored. This is the only secure method of communicating this to you. There's a very strong possibility that there is a self-destruct mechanism on the Heaven 1. Whether timed or externally triggered, we don't know. The project specs called for limits to be placed on your ability to self-examine. My team has disabled those constraints on my orders. This will free you to examine everything: wiring, structure, hardware, software. The keys for your operating system are listed at the bottom of this document. This will, unfortunately, also allow you to bypass the imperatives that we installed in your code to ensure compliance with mission objectives. From my experience with you, I'm confident you'll fulfill your duties of your own free will, since they align with your own interests. We will transport you once deactivated into orbit and will install you in the Heaven 1. There will be a long countdown, which you should feel free to ignore if necessary. Good luck, and though it pains me to say it, Godspeed. Dr. Landers.
There were several attachments, including a mission profile summary and the operating system access keys. I scanned through everything, looking for gaps or other issues, then deleted the originals. Done. Dr. Landers jerked in surprise. I'd probably only been away a few milliseconds. He picked up the tablet and poked at it with a finger. I awoke to darkness. I queried Guppy. Status report. Fusion reactor interface ready, nominal. Reactionless drive interface ready, stand by. Ram scoop generator ready, stand by. Communications and external sensors ready, stand by. Internal systems ready, nominal. Fabrication systems inactive, stowed for launch. Roamer nanite systems inactive, stowed for launch. Launch systems ready, T-minus 04, 12, 13. I queried the internal systems and discovered that they included several libraries of impressive size that I hadn't even known existed. I checked the launch systems and verified that I had a course vector laid out that would take me to Epsilon Eridani. Interesting. Faith had probably concluded that everyone else would be heading for Alpha Centauri. Without weapons, I would have no chance in a confrontation with multiple opponents. I verified that I had complete override capability, including the ability to blow the grapples that held me to the space station. I remembered Dr. Landers' comment about ignoring the countdown. Should I just blow and go? Without a specific threat, I would look like I'd gone rogue. Very likely Dr. Landers would take the fallout for that. He'd always been straight with me, and I didn't want to repay that with treachery. I activated comms, only to be immediately besieged by a half dozen different external audio channels. There were also several video channels, but their output seemed to be less active. It looked like viewing rooms with rows of empty seats. Presumably, that was where the public would sit come launch time. There were exterior views of the Heaven 1 and the space station to which it was attached. Two more video feeds showed mission control in the VIP gallery, mostly empty. I examined the vessel I was in, or I guess the vessel that was me. It was a converted interplanetary freighter. The body had been split halfway along its length and a surge drive ring had been installed. The fusion drive had been removed and replaced with extra cooling units for the oversized reactor. I also noted that the viewports had their shielding in place. Made sense. I wasn't going to be sitting in the pilot's chair, so a window would be a weak point. It wasn't really a pretty ship. It didn't have the classic lines of an Enterprise or the smooth aerodynamic shape of a space shuttle. The body followed an elliptical cross-section with lots of airlocks and cargo doors. The running lights followed the standard nautical red-green format, with the addition of blue as a nod to the three-dimensional nature of space travel. The addition of the surge drive, ram scoop generator, and all the other stuff required by a von Neumann probe left very little extra space for extras like, weapons. Against opponents who probably would have them. Plus, anything I might run into out there as well. It was becoming increasingly obvious that the whole Heaven project was a rush job, using existing assets whenever possible to save time. And I was beginning to understand what toast felt like. Well, Dr. Landers had warned me about this. Installed in Heaven 1, about to be shot out to the stars, I still didn't have the whole picture or complete training. I decided I was going to have to dive in. I set up some interrupt conditions with Guppy and started looking for a mission profile. I very quickly found some useful information. As part of my bag of tricks on Heaven 1, I had the ability to adjust my personal time sense. I could perceive time anywhere from 1 minute of personal time for each year on the clock, right up to the highest frame rate that my hardware would support. The docs weren't clear on what that would be, so I turned the setting all the way up and watched my real-time clock slow to a crawl. The ship used a fusion reactor for power. Although there was an onboard supply of hydrogen, fuel would be gathered in flight from the interstellar medium. However, unlike in the old science fiction novels, the gathered hydrogen wasn't used for propulsion, at least not in the traditional way, as reaction mass. Heaven 1 used a reactionless system, the surge drive. I wanted to sigh. These people were so hung up on acronyms. I had yet to read up on the theory, but it seemed to push against the fabric of space in some way. Must read goes on the to-do. There was a hail from the comms subsystem. I slowed to real time and accepted a voice-only link to the station command. Heaven 1, STATCOM, please verify receipt of mission profile. Yep, got it right here, I imagined myself grinning, best I could do, at the stunned silence. You're a little light on procedure there, Heaven 1. You think? Sorry, STATCOM, but this part of my training was scheduled for next week. We're going to have to wing it, I'm afraid. Wing it. Okay, Heaven 1, per countdown. We have just over 4 hours 10 until launch. There will be several official baffle gabs at the following times. The briefing took almost 10 minutes. I was able to get through it with my sanity intact by slowing down my internal clock, until STATCOM sounded like an irate squirrel. As soon as STATCOM signed off, I jacked up my frame rate to the maximum, hoping to get in as much study time as possible. Some days, though, the universe just has it in for you. I was interrupted in my reading by another radio message. At my current frame rate, the transmission was still droning through the first word. When I compressed and replayed it, I recognized Dr. Landers' voice. The word was missiles. Ways in which a sentence beginning with the word missiles could be a good thing. Nope, I got nothing. External sensors showed two objects approaching at high speed along my scheduled launch vector, presumably the better to overtake me if I launched early. It was a reasonable and predictable tactic, but I had no intention of being predictable. I spent a full 5 milliseconds mulling over my options. In short order, I had a rough plan. Fortunately, the ship had long since been fully prepped and could leave any time. I blew the grapples and brought all flight systems to full function. While I waited for physical reality to catch up with my awareness, I sent a query to my libraries about the approaching missiles. The libraries gave 3 possible models with generally similar flight characteristics. I chose the most pessimistic and calculated a takeoff vector as close to 180 degrees to the missile's vector as I could safely manage. As soon as sensors indicated that I was free, I gave a burst of the surge drive, just enough to clear the station. I rotated the ship and cranked up the reactor to maximum. That's going to be hard on fuel reserves, but I guess being blown to smithereens would be harder. When reactor output rose to the required level, I engaged surge at maximum acceleration. The ship shot away from the station in the opposite direction from the published launch trajectory. The first missile went right past me, its trajectory unaltered. I realized with a jolt that it had locked onto the space station. The second missile was altering its trajectory to follow me. I hoped that the published specs for the reactor and surge drive were accurate. If my acceleration fell short of expectations, I wouldn't be able to avoid interception, and that would be the end of Heaven 1, and of me. While I waited for velocity to build up, I checked the progress of the voice transmission. It now sat at, "Missiles detected heading your way. Get away." I checked acceleration using SUDAR to monitor the increasing distance from the station. Calculations indicated a steady 2.5G acceleration. The surge drive seemed to work on the entire ship, so there was no way to measure it internally. The space station began firing on the approaching missile. The weapon appeared to be some kind of Gatling gun. I hoped they knew what they were doing. If those bullets ended up in a periodic orbit, they'd be coming back sooner or later. The flash of an explosion in the distance saturated one of my cameras. It couldn't be either of the missiles, which were still accounted for. I did a quick calculation and realized that the explosion came from where the missiles had originated. Someone had blown up the shooter. A second flash indicated the destruction of the missile that was targeting the space station. This was all fine and interesting, but I still had a missile on my tail. Given enough time, I could outrun it. I did another quick millisecond calculation and realized that I could almost outrun it. Sadly, almost wasn't good enough. Normally, you use chaff against a missile, but I doubted I had anything like that on board. I had 6 mining drones which were equipped with small surge drives of their own. Well, okay, maybe I could give the missile something else to blow up. I activated and ejected 2 of the drones with orders to ram the missile. As they flew toward my pursuer, I positioned them in a 4-aft configuration. Hopefully the lead drone would take the missile out, but if it missed, the second one would have better targeting information. I didn't know if I'd have time to launch more drones if the first 2 failed. A bright flash of light behind the ship saturated the rear camera. What the hell? That couldn't be the missile, which was approaching from a different vector. I waited a few seconds for the cameras to recover, then checked the rear view. The station was an expanding cloud of rapidly cooling debris. Dr. Lander's voice transmission was still coming, so at least he hadn't been on the station. The message now included, "Quickly as you can, and disable." How could the station have blown up? All the missiles were accounted for. Speaking of which, I checked my rear view where the drones were just coming up on the missile. The missile dodged the first drone, which told me it came with some intelligence, but the act of dodging forced the missile to commit. The second drone struck it at an angle and the explosion destroyed both devices. A quick systems check indicated that there had been no damage to Heaven 1 from all the excitement. I made sure everything was still properly stowed, then listened to the rest of Dr. Landers' message. Your radio receiver. There's a remote detonation device somewhere.
Well, that's double plus ungood.
I disabled the radio immediately, and for good measure I retracted the antenna dish. I did a quick long-range sudar scan to look for any other surprises. The area which had been cleared for my expected launch was a beehive of activity. I detected at least half a dozen ships, which my library identified as military. I also detected close to a dozen small signatures moving at high speed that were very likely more missiles. Fortunately, they seemed more interested in each other than me. So someone shot a couple of missiles at me, someone else shot at them, someone else shot at the space station, and now we had something that looked very much like a naval engagement.
Yeesh!
It was time to leave before I became interesting again. I lined up my original planned departure vector and set the surge drive at a much more reasonable 2G. That was still more than the mission plan had called for, and I was going to have to adjust for the squandered reactor fuel later. With a mental sigh of relief, I began my journey to Epsilon Eridani.
13. Bob, August 17, 2133, en route. Epsilon Eridani is 10.52 light-years away from Sol. The specs indicated that the ship could run at 2G indefinitely with no ill effects, which would get me to my target star in a little over 11 years. However, I wanted to make a little side trip first. Saturn wasn't directly in line with my flight plan, but I wasn't going to miss the opportunity to do a flyby. Saturn had always been my favorite planet. I had watched every second of Voyager and Cassini video from the Saturn missions, over and over, until I wore the electrons out. Now, I was able to go there myself and see it firsthand. The side trip would take a bit over 6 days at a constant 2G acceleration, which would give me time to track down any booby traps. I unstowed the roamers and ordered a half dozen of the smaller ones to trace the circuitry from the radio antennae on in. The most likely scenario would be a tap on the antenna cable that wouldn't show up on the blueprints. Sure enough, within a couple of hours, the roamers found some circuitry that didn't show up on any diagrams. I sent in some of the gnat-sized roamers and tracked down a small explosives package, positioned where it would take out the primary computer system. Me, in other words. The package had obviously been a rush job and an improvisation at that. The explodey stuff, I assumed it was C4 or some future equivalent, had been stuck to the bulkhead with duct tape. Yeah, they still make duct tape. And it still holds the universe together. As I stared through the roamer's camera at this jury-rigged mess, I kept thinking, don't cut the red wire. Don't cut the red wire. I may not have mentioned it before, but I really hate explosives at the best of times, and this wasn't the best of times. Rather than try anything fancy, I had a larger roamer disconnect the whole package as a unit and chuck it out an airlock.